Smiley Vaughan and Nathan Shared Productions present Icons in Jazz. Jelly Roll Morton, the self-proclaimed inventor of jazz. He was one of the pioneers in the early hours of the birth of jazz. He was one of the genre's very first giants who declared himself a legend. He was jazz's first great composer and arranger with his own individual style. The pianist and composer Jelly Roll Morton. Jelly Roll Morton once said about himself, "It is evidently known beyond contradiction that New Orleans is the cradle of jazz, and I, myself, happened to be the creator in the year 1902. Quite a self-assured and bullish statement, but was Jelly Roll Morton really the genre's inventor, first genius, and its original great composer? Or was this loudmouthed Creole with diamonds in his teeth, sharp suits and flashy jewelry just a braggart with an overinflated opinion of himself? Today he is still seen by some as a charlatan and opportunist, but the majority of historians and critics feel that, despite his exaggeration, Morton was indeed one of the first great geniuses of jazz, both as a pianist and composer, and that he was undoubtedly the first jazz musician to foresee the potential of the gramophone record and to tailor his writing and arranging precisely to the demand of the new medium. Thank you. The Black Bottom Stomp, composed by Jelly Roll Morton and Wex Down with his group, the Red Hot Peppers, in the Victor Recording Studio in Chicago on the 15th of September 1926. Few better examples exist of the pianist's talent for cramming a varied, constantly moving arrangement into the cramped playing time of a 78th RPM record, using several instruments in turn. George Mitchell's trumpet and Omar Simeon's clarinet to vary the texture of the band's sound. And after one or two full band choruses underpinned by John Lindsay's bass, Morton inserts a brilliant solo before the final choruses of Andrew Hillier's Tom Tom Offbeat and Kid Ory's Sliding Trombone, creating a true masterpiece of early jazz. Ferdinand Joseph Lamothe was born on the 20th of October 1890, born in the heart of New Orleans as the son of racially mixed Creole parents with African, French, and Spanish ancestors. His father was Martin Edouard Joseph Lamothe, a bricklayer and occasional trombonist, who left his mother, Louise Hermance Monette, a domestic worker, when Ferdinand was three. After his mother married William Mouton in 1894, the young boy adopted his stepfather's surname.
We always had some kind of a musical instruments in the house, including guitar, drums, piano, trombone, and so forth and so on, harmonica and jukebox. We had lots of them. And everybody always played for their pleasure, whatever the ones that desired to play. We always had ample time that was given us and periods to rehearse our lessons, which was given to anyone that was desirous in accepting lessons. But of course, the family never had an idea that they wanted musicians in the family to make a living. They always had it in their mind that a musician was a tramp. With the exceptions of the French opera house players, which they always patronized. They only thought there was the great musicians in the country. In fact, I myself was inspired by going to the French opera house once, because the fact of it was I liked to play piano. And piano was known at that time to be an instrument for a lady. So I had... And in my mind, that if I played piano, I would be misunderstood.
But young Ferdinand had got piano lessons from an early age, and when he was 14, he got the opportunity to play the piano to entertain the crowd in the bars and brothels of Storyville, New Orleans' red light district, very much to the anger of his family, as you can imagine. When his grandmother heard about it, she was convinced he is playing devil's music. She threw him out. To protect his family, Lamothe en Mouton took on the English name Morton to deflect from his Creole background. And Ferdinand became Jelly Roll, a stage name derived from his sexual slang and suitable for his working environment. Jelly Roll Morton was in his element. Thank you. Created as a piano roll in 1924, Midnight Mama is one of Jelly Roll Morton's first notable recordings after he had signed a contract with a Paramount label in Chicago in summer 1923. Over the next few years, he cut several solos and band discs for a variety of labels until he secured his lucrative Victor label contract in 1926. Like the young Louis Armstrong and many other musicians, Morton started his working life in Storyville, where he became one of the professional pianists who supplied music to the clients of the sporting houses as they went about or finished their furtive business. But his interest in the Zemir side of New Orleans life didn't stop at playing piano, and he became a pool shark and a pimp. Using his charm and dexterity to negotiate the shady underworld of his hometown. The famous diamond in his front tooth was a symbol of his notoriety, the trademark of a man who had made substantial amounts of money. His musical influences were quite diverse, ranging from French or Spanish operas, which he recalled with affection, to the rougher music of the streets and taverns, which at the turn of the century was not called jazz, but hot music. Music which got its heat from the tension between steady beat and syncopated melodies, like it happened in ragtime. Another solo piano track from summer 1924, this time waxed down for and released by the Gennett label, the perfect rag, as Jelly Roll Morton called this composition, showcasing his skills as ragtime pianist. When ragtime pianists wanted to play hot, they unintentionally started to increase the tempo of the tune, setting a perfect tempo for that kind of music, which Morton regarded as a mistake. He found out that the slow tunes did more in the development of the music, which made him to an attentive observer and analyst of the transformation of ragtime into jazz.
Get up the next train and play like this.
When in 1917 prostitution nearby naval bases was prohibited by law, it led to the closure of Storyville. Many musicians lost their jobs and had to move on, and a large contingent travelled north to Chicago, which in the process developed to a new and vibrant jazz center. Morton first moved into a different direction, tried to settle in California, but after a short stint he went on and spent a few months at a time in several places, from Los Angeles to St. Louis, from San Francisco to Memphis. And in each place he met musicians and stored away what he learned from them in his memory. Remembered for his habit, turning up with his flamboyant appearance, outplaying any challengers at the piano. He finally left his sweetheart Anita in Los Angeles behind, followed the call of the music and of music publishing, decided to throw in his lot with Walter Melrose's company in Chicago, whom he trusted, and he set off to the Windy City to find work. I packed up and caught a train, and since then I never seen either Los Angeles or Anita again, he told Alan Lomax in 1938. And it was in Chicago where his recording career began. Thank you. Hello Central, give me Dr. Jazz, an old praise of jazz, the new musical genre that slowly began to conquer the bright lights big cities of the United States. Dr. Jazz, a hot little number written by King Oliver but picked up by Jelly Roll Morton and his band, the Red Hot Peppers, and recorded in Morton's new residency in Chicago in September 1926. The pianist is brought on by George Mitchell on the trumpet, Kid Ory trombone, Omar Simeon clarinet, Johnny Sankier on guitar, John Lindsay on bass, and Andrew Hillier on the drums. Simeon's long note at the start of his clarinet solo shows great breath control, setting the pace before Morton launches into the exuberant vocal, followed by solos by each player. With such excitement, Morton had the perfect ensembles for his ideas. During his 6 years in Chicago, the pianist was at his peak. While he introduced his style, repertoire, and brilliance via his piano solos, his 1926-27 recordings for the Victor label with his Red Hot Peppers are among the most exciting of his career. The Red Hot Peppers in full flight there, and Jelly Roll Morton at his peak, gliding through an original, his original Jelly Roll Blues, Waxtown in Chicago in December 1926. A masterly reworking of the classic 12-bar blues form. And I wonder if you have recognized the different rhythms behind the soloist. The Latin rattle for George Mitchell's cornet, and the repeated chords behind Simeon's clarinet, each designed to build the tension over the entire length of the piece, especially when the whole band re-enters after Mitchell's second solo. Although his playing style and his sophisticated technique as an arranger changed, Jelly Roll characteristics didn't. He carried his in New Orleans adapted lifestyle and connections to the underworld into Chicago, and when he didn't play piano, Morton acted as a pimp, smuggler, and boxing promoter, making quite an impression with a shining diamond and a gun in his pocket, looking like a gangster and trying to dupe his contemporary with one of his favorite sayings. I have more suits as you have handkerchiefs. With his notorious boasting, he annoyed most of the people around him, and his flaunted wealth became more and more a facade. Jelly Roll Morton became the victim of his gambling addiction. Oh, Mr. Jelly Lord. Another highlight from Jelly Roll Morton's recording periods with the Victor label, where the pianist got the perfect support for his ideas and where he is backed by some of the greatest musicians at the vibrating Chicago jazz scene. Like Morton, born, raised and flourished at the cradle of jazz in New Orleans. Like clarinet virtuoso also Johnny Dodds and his brother drummer Warren Baby Dodds, who team up with Morton on Mr. Jelly Roll, recorded in summer 1927. But his boastful behavior and bragging ways unfortunately hurt his career, and more musicians refused to play with him. And with the center of jazz shifting to New York, Morton decided to leave Chicago and his problems behind and relocated to the Big Apple. But before we follow him, I would like to focus on his undeniable achievement as one of the most capable composers and arrangers of early jazz, with Morton explaining the creation of his famous King Porter stomp.
Now this tune become to be the outstanding favorite of every great hot band throughout the world. And until today, this tune has been the cause of many great bands to come to fame. Of course, I tell you the fact about it. I don't know what the name Stomp mean myself. There really wasn't any meaning, only that people would stamp their feet. And I decided that the name Stomp would be fitted for it.
According to Jelly Roll Morton, he wrote the King Porter Stomp already in 1906, claiming that it was the first stomp in the history of jazz. As Morton said, written for Porter King, a very dear friend of mine and a marvelous pianist now in the cold, cold ground. Fact is that the composition is now considered as one of the most important ones in the history of jazz, picked up and recorded by Benny Goodman in 1935, where it became a huge hit during the swing era. This solo recording by Morton himself dates back to 1923, one of many classic stomps he wrote and recorded during his life. As I said, Morton relocated to New York in 1928, but the sound of the city was changing and the Big Apple experienced the birth of the swing era. Although Morton's Victor recording continued into the 1930s, some of his performances became sloppy and erratic and slowly drifted out of fashion. There were still a few more classics to come, but the iceberg started slowly to burn. Thank you. That swings, and you can clearly hear the influence of the new era, the influence of swing. Drawn from a set of big band tracks led by Jelly Roll Morton after moving to New York, this Morton original entitled Burning the Iceberg, recorded in July 1929, gives the lie to the idea that he could only lead bands in the archaic New Orleans Dixieland style. In an arrangement that teems with life, he shows that he could direct a big band that compares well with the new swinging style of the Big Apple. But with the rise of the Depression and with his increasing financial problems, Morton drifted more and more into obscurity. He was considered old-fashioned and did not have the temperament to work as a sideman. He ended up playing in a Washington, D.C. dive for patrons who had little idea about his contribution and achievements. Ironically, it was around that time that his King Porter Stomp became one of the most popular songs of the swing era. But few knew that he wrote it. Morton worked as a bar pianist, MC, as a doorman, and behind the bar, and didn't earn much money on good days, not even $10.
When I made $100 a day, I thought I had a small day. And now today, if I make 10, I think I've got a great day.
However, in 1938, his fate turned to the better when musicologist Alan Lomax found him and sat down with him to record an extensive, fascinating, and historic series of musical interviews for the Library of Congress. Sitting behind the piano and telling his life story, his storytelling jelly roll colorful, and his playing still remarkable as he recalled the good old days in New Orleans and demonstrated the various piano styles of the era.
Jazz music. In fact, I changed every style to mine. style that I played at New Orleans. In my estimation, it's a vast difference. How much more have you got on that left?
A little bit longer.
Tell a story
about the
fight, Jack. After I arrived in St. Louis, and I decided to not tell anybody I could play piano, my goodness, the snow was piled up. You couldn't see the streetcars. I never seen such a snow in all my life. I just had left Johnny and Reb Spikes, the boys that wrote Someday Sweetheart. In fact, the name is on it. So, of course, they've got the full claim to it. We had left McCabe's Minstrel. I quit the show in St. Louis, and that's why I happened to be there.
In his 1938 Library of Congress recordings, Jelly Roll Morton demonstrated an illuminating comparison of two ways of playing Scott Joplin's Maple Leaf Rag, one reflecting the Missouri ragtime tradition and the second showing a New Orleans jazz-inflected approach to the composition. The 8-disc box set of the complete recordings is staggering in depth and magnitude, an intimate oral history of music and culture of early jazz with demonstrative musical accompaniment. Loosened by liquor and encouraged by Lomax, Morton speaks of spirituals, blues, jazz, ragtime, and symphonies, airing his own theories of music, the value of jazz, still claiming his achievement as an originator, describing the scene, fine food, alcohol, narcotics, cart and pool sharks, prostitutes, pimps, pianists, and other nocturnal entertainments. But you can also hear his disappointment and his bitterness not getting the attention and appreciation he deserves from punters and critics alike. After the interviews, Morton was determined to make a comeback. He moved to New York and led a few band sessions with such New Orleans stalwarts and sidemen like Sidney Bechet, Sidney de Paris, and Albert Nicholas. There has been plenty of controversy about the title of this little ditty called Whining Boy Blues, but most experts now agree that Whining Boy was Jelly Roll's nickname from his youthful Storyville days, and it was a pun that signified someone who liked to drink wine and was also a pimp. This is born out of the line, "Gonna pick it up and shake it like sweet staving chain." The latter was a woman celebrated in many blues lyrics for her legendary sexual athletic. Jelly Roll Morton and his New Orleans Jazzmen from September 1939. During this period in New York, Morton recorded some wonderful band and solo sides, but none of those were big sellers. His disappointment and bitterness increased, particularly shortly after a radio broadcast overhearing the presenter declaring blues composer W.C. Handy as originator of jazz instead of Jelly Roll. Morton sat down and wrote a long and angry letter to the editor of the Downbeat Jazz magazine, where he wrote, "By this announcement you have done me a great injustice, and you have also misled many of your fans. It is evidently known beyond contradiction that New Orleans is the cradle of jazz, and I myself happen to be the creator in the year 1902, many years before the Dixieland Band organized. Jazz music is a style, not compositions. Any kind of music may be played in jazz if one has the knowledge. The first stomp was written in 1906, namely King Porter's stomp. Georgia Swing was the first to be named Swing in 1907. Jelly Roll Morton, originator of jazz and stomp and his Red Hot Peppers, is written on the photo promoting Morton's summer 1928 recording of Georgia Swing, a swing tune, according to Morton, already written in 1907, here rearranged by the pianist and waxed down during his time in New York. Jelly Roll Morton was a lot. He was many things, but he wasn't the sole creator of jazz. He was a pioneer without any doubts, and that in more ways than one. Jelly Roll Morton is beside Buddy Bolden, the greatest legendary figure of early New Orleans jazz, and he had written some of the early style-defining compositions. He was one of the first significant jazz arranger and one of the first who tried to give jazz an image. With his and his band's colorful and flamboyant attitude and appearance, he may be considered as the first pop star in jazz.
Thought I heard Buddy Bolden say, "You nasty but you dirty, take it away. You're terrible, you're awful, take it away." I thought I heard him say, I thought I heard Buddy Bolden shout, "Open up that window and let that bad air out. Open up that window and let that foul air out." Yes, I thought I heard Buddy Bolden say.
"I thought I heard Buddy Bolden say" dates to one of Jelly Roll Morton's final sessions, to September 1939, when early jazz, the music of only a decade prior, was being viewed as passé. This nod to another New Orleans pioneer is Morton Chimes, his farewell, you can say. His piano tolls the bell. Sidney Bechet's soprano sax has a serene chorus. The New Orleans jazzmen paid their respect. In late 1940, an ailing Jelly Roll Morton decided to head out to Los Angeles again, but at the age of 49, he seemed like an old man. He tried to get back to his former level, but lost ground because of health problems, the lack of medical care, and the long-term effects of a knife attack. He died nearly penniless on the 10th of July 1941 in Los Angeles County Hospital. Only a few musicians came to his funeral to say their last goodbye to a brilliant pioneer and innovator, and to an eccentric self-exposer who wanted one thing above all: to set himself a monument. Ironically, his music soon became popular again as the New Orleans jazz revivalist movement caught fire. And if he had lived just a few more years, the chances are good that he would have been restored to his former prominence.
Mama, leave a dime for bear. The rooster crowed and the hen ran around. She said, if you want my fricassee, you gotta round me down.